Hey, I've got a question for you. Do you know if you're tracking the right data, the right metrics, the right key performance indicators in your practice? This is something that's huge for us and really helps us make solid decisions within our business. But the prior software that we were using to run our practice made it really, really challenging to actually get that data out and use it in reports. Since we switched to PGA Everywhere, this has actually become way, way easier for us to be able to have the right data. We have a dashboard of all the things that we actually want to see, the metrics that we want to pull, and it makes our life a lot easier to pull the information that we need to make the right decisions within our business. So if you're running blind, you're not tracking the right things, or you're having a hard time actually pulling everything together, I highly recommend you check out our friends at PT Everywhere and see what they've got going on with their software platform. It's what we use for our practice. It's been a game changer for us. You can check them out at PT Everywhere. .com. I think you really like it. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name's Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's going on, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And today we are talking about hiring. We're talking about mistakes that we make, mistakes that I've made, and mistakes that I see people make in the hiring process when, in particular, they're bringing on a staff clinician. So we'll dive into that real quick. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. If you listen on a regular basis, welcome back. My goal with this podcast has always been to share what is happening in real time in the sort of cash and hybrid world, you know, to be able to shorten the learning curve for you and hopefully help you and your practice be successful over the long run. So for me, the hiring side of things, especially when you look at hiring a staff clinician, I think is actually probably the most difficult hire that someone makes early on, maybe ever, honestly. I feel like administrative assistant, office manager, whatever you want to consider, you know, your admin, I feel like it's a much easier hire because there's not as much complexity with compensation. Their roles are very different than your roles. You're basically, you know, empowering that person to do the things that you have been doing, and then they take those things off your plate and you don't necessarily have to, you know, really do those anymore if you get the right person. So, you know, those would be things like following up with patients, scheduling patients, reaching out if you're checking like benefits on anything, management of inbox, just day-to-day stuff, answering the phone within an office space. So that's typically the first hire that people make. And I definitely recommend that's the first one that people make over a staff clinician, even though on paper, when you look at it, a office manager, an admin, they are not a revenue producing person, right? So they're not generating you any money, but what they are doing is saving you time. And that is very valuable and something that you need in the business, because the mistake that I see people make is if they hire, let's say you hire a staff clinician before you bring on an administrative person, then you become the administrative person. And if that's what you want to do, if you want to be the office manager and you don't want to be involved in patient care really at all, maybe that's the right move for you. But most of you want to be involved in patient care and probably should be, because it's more profitable early on that way. An administrative or, you know, assistant or an admin, office manager, they get your time back, and they absorb the other staff clinicians as well, the work from those people. So that's typically the first hire. It's really, you know, it's a bit daunting if you've never hired somebody, but there's less you can screw up with that one than when you bring on a staff clinician. So when we look at hiring your first staff clinician, this is a scary step in a lot of ways, because most people they've never hired anybody for their own business. Maybe you're a clinic director, or, you know, some sort of role like that in a supervisor role where you're a part of the hiring process, and maybe you are even hiring people, but you're hiring people for someone else's business and you're typically following their processes that they have. Maybe they have headhunters that are finding people. Maybe they have, you know, an in with a school or with new grads in some way. So there's lead flow in a way in terms of new people to interview, to bring on for these entry-level positions. And it's a bit different whenever you start to do it on your own. And the main issues that I see, there's three that I'm going to get into. But to get to this point, you have to start your business, grow your business, bring someone on already that is in an administrative role, and get to a point where, I mean, ultimately you're kind of time poor and you are making good income. Everything you do is you. So there's not really a business there just yet, but you're getting there, because as soon as you bring somebody else on that can start to fulfill within the business with you, now you're one step closer to having a business that is not a lifestyle business, but it's an actual like true business. And the test for us for that is the hit by a bus test. So if you were to get hit by a bus today, would your business still function without you, right? Like completely take you out of the equation. Would your business still function? Would it still generate revenue for your family? Would it still be, you know, able to employ the people that you've hired? Would it still run? You know, is it systemized and non-dependent on you primarily? And you know, everybody starts their business the same way. Like, it's just you. It's just, that's how the vast majority of businesses are started. There's one person with an idea and they try to, you know, see that to the point where they can then bring other people into their vision. Well, at this stage, you know, you're very close to bringing somebody in that's going to help you grow your business by being able to see more people in most cases in these types of businesses. So the first mistake that I see, well, and before I get there, if you're there, congratulations. That's a big ass deal. That's a very hard thing to do. To grow a cash practice in particular past yourself is not easy. So congrats if you're even listening to this and thinking, wow, okay, hiring, like what do I do? Or more importantly, what do I not do? So these three mistakes. The first one is you hire somebody that's just like you. They're very similar to you. And I'm saying these mistakes because I've made all these mistakes. So this isn't like I am bringing up, you know, just what you shouldn't do because of theory. Like this is, I've done all of these and I've seen people that we've worked with do these as well, even though I've, you know, we recommend certain things around hiring. We don't hire people for the businesses that we work with. Ultimately, that's on them who they decide to bring on. But in some cases, it's clear, you know, it's like, dude, yeah, you like this guy because he's basically just like you. You know, it's a, obviously, you want to like the people that you work with, but you don't necessarily want them to have all of the character traits that you have, because if you are willing to start your own business, you have some element of entrepreneurial, you know, instincts or desire or underlying just natural behavior that is going to make you more likely to want to start your own business. And when you hire people like this, it's kind of like raising a baby lion. So you get this cute little lion and you're like, this is awesome. This lion's tiny and people are, you know, it's just amazing. No one has a baby lion, and you feed it and it gets bigger. And then, you know, it's like a teenage lion. And now it's like, well, bro, I'm hungrier than the food you're giving me. And then next thing you know, it eats you. You know, that's basically what happens when you hire somebody that is a very entrepreneurial clinician. They're awesome because you guys have things in common and they're go-getters. They're self-motivated. You know, they typically are down to just pivot quickly to things and move different directions in a small business. But if you do not give them the right structure and growth opportunities, they just are gonna leave, take your client base with you that they've worked with, and they're gonna start their own thing. That is legitimately the case in with many people that we've worked with and people that we've brought into our own practice. And in some ways, you have to decide whether you want that or not. And one of our mentors told us, you know, you have to look at people as rivers or ponds. Some people are ponds, they don't move. You know, they're pretty stagnant, they stay still. That's like an employee that's not going to go anywhere. A river is more exciting, right? It's faster moving, but it's going to move on. And if you want to hire rivers or more entrepreneurial people, cool. Know that. You're probably going to have them for like maybe 2 years, and then they're going to move on and do their own thing. But they could be very valuable to your business and as far as helping it grow during the time that they're there. And if that is the direction you decide to go, do that knowingly, and don't hire somebody that you think is a pond, but really they're a river. And keep in mind that as you bring these people on, they can be great assets to the business if given opportunity to progress within the business. Because just like you, think about it for a second. One of the reasons you maybe got frustrated with wherever you were at is because, you know, you saw the writing on the wall. You didn't really see a lot of opportunity to progress or be creative or try to work on projects that you found interesting. And the same thing will happen with these people. So keep in mind who you're hiring and what you're hiring them for. Are you hiring a river? Are you hiring a pond? And early on, I see a lot of people hire rivers. They hire people that are entrepreneurial because they are entrepreneurial. And very often, those people end up moving on and doing their own thing. You know, unless that business has fast growth and can sustain that type of person moving up and more into more of a leadership role. So mistake number one, you're hiring people that are too similar to you. Mistake number two, unrealistic marketing expectations. So if we go back to the first mistake, those people actually might do really well in this setting. So this would be assuming and putting the complete burden on the person you're hiring to bring in the people that they're going to work with. I see this so often, and I hear the frustration in people that bring this up. They're like, my staff clinician just won't go out in the community and get their own patients. They won't initiate setting up workshops. They won't join a networking group on their own. No fucking shit. Of course they won't. They're working for your business. If you wanted them to act like that, they would just go open their own business. Like that's the thing you got to keep in mind. You are bringing somebody into your business that is there to be a clinician. They think they're supposed to see patients because that's typically what they're going to do in a clinic. And all of a sudden they come into your practice and you see the overhead you have because of their salary, and you start to scramble and get frustrated, and really you get a bit worried about meeting the overhead because of the delay it can take sometimes in building somebody's schedule up as a new provider's brought on, which we tend to see is about a 6-month time frame. Not to say that they're not seeing patients during that 6 month, but really until they're in a spot where it's pretty good for them to, you know, to be employed by that company, and they're profitable, and you know, you're not worried about their schedule. It's about a 6-month window, right? So what I see is at about month two, especially with that first hire, people start scrambling and they start just getting frustrated with the lack of growth sometimes that they have, and the lack of maybe networking and local marketing that the clinician they hired is putting in. And in many cases, with minimal to no training, minimal to no structure from the business owner. And this is a huge mistake, because you will frustrate whoever you hire, and they're going to start looking for a job somewhere else because they came in with the expectation that they were going to be an employee in a business where there's a lot of perks in terms of being able to function as a clinician in a manner that many people want to. But all of a sudden, instead of them being a clinician, they've turned into a local marketing, you know, expert or whatever they're supposed to be, to go out and get all these patients that they thought they were going to get from just being an employee of the business. Keep that in mind for a second. As someone who has worked for somebody else, which is pretty much everybody, you know, if you go get a job at an ice cream stand, you know, and you're like, okay, cool, I'm going to scoop ice cream, and they tell you to go out there and spin around one of those big arrows to get more people in line to buy ice cream, you're going to be like, what the hell? I thought I was scooping ice cream. And now I'm out here with a sign dancing around trying to get people to come in to buy from us. Like the role is different. And the expectations are not met for what the employee thinks is going to happen. So they end up with more of an eat what you kill mentality, which is not that that's more of a contractor mentality. That's more of a somebody that wants to have, you know, flexibility with their hours. They want to, you know, be able to see a set number of people and be done with it. And maybe they do that in multiple places. That's more of a contractor mentality. And when you kind of shove somebody into an eat what you kill environment, they're going to wonder why they're not just doing it for themselves. Because aside from the legalities of setting up a business like this and finding space and, you know, some of the things that are challenging on the front end, the hardest part when you get started is understanding how to get people to come and work with you and how to sell them into working with you. And that's basically what you're sort of just putting on them. The burden of that, you're putting on your staff members. So if you're going to get them involved in local marketing, which I do recommend you do, I recommend that you do it a fraction of what you have been doing. You know, they can't be teaching three workshops a month. You know, maybe it's one. Maybe you set them up to go do, you know, a little local networking meeting with somebody that you know, and that's like one or two times a month. Maybe you have them, you know, join a structured networking group instead of just having them go figure it out all on their own. Maybe you get them a gym membership to an area where, or a gym that you want them to be more visible in, and they get to train there as well. And it's a good way to build a community and networking relationships, and you're supporting them through that, not necessarily just tell them to go figure it out. And it sounds like, yeah, who would do that? A lot of people do that a lot. And it's frustrating for both the business owner and the clinician because there's a communication breakdown of expectations. That is the biggest problem that I see in regards to what drives this. And it creates a lot of people that split off and end up going and doing their own thing because they're treated like that. They're treated like a, you know, an entrepreneur, but they're functioning in the role of a staff clinician. And it tends to not work out really well if you do that. So number three, and this brings me to sort of the last one, but it encompasses the rest, is poor pay setup. So traditionally, the PT world, the clinical world, I guess, in general, there's employees and there's contractors. And there's a lot of gray area associated with this in terms of what stipulations have to be met for somebody to be considered an employee or a contractor. These are federal regulations, but also there are some state-to-state differences. I'm not going to get into that because I'm not an employment attorney, but these function within our space. And contractors, most people, that's the thing that they look at as the easiest place to start. And they may say, okay, well, you can see, you know, people in my clinic on the weekends, and I'll give you $50 per person that you see, right? And maybe that person sees, I don't know, four people on a weekend. They make an extra $800 to $1,000 a month, and the clinic generates some revenue from that, and it sounds like a win-win. Rarely do I see these contract positions work out long-term unless somebody literally just doesn't need a job. That's about the only time that I've seen this. So let's say their household has, you know, a great income that's coming in from their spouse, and they really don't need to work full time. They just kind of want to make a little bit extra money, use their skill set still, and not really have much to worry about. Like that could work out in that situation. But more often than not, what I see is people that should be employees be treated as contractors, and ultimately not getting the amount of support that they need and not the safety of a paycheck versus a contractor, 1099 distribution. So what I mean by that is a contractor goes into the month with no idea what they're going to actually make. There's no consistency necessarily, unless there's a history of that. But in most cases, there isn't. So they don't really know. And they show up and they're going to make whatever they're going to make based off of whatever volume they're fulfilling on. These are people that are a bit more transient and are typically not looking to just be employed by the same place for extended periods of time. If you're looking at an employee setup, you're going to need a salary associated with that. This is what you make per month. Now, there may be bonuses in conjunction with that, which is oftentimes the model that we recommend implementing because of it just incentivizing the things that we want to be done in the practice. So this could be based off of number of visits that you have as a simple example. You know, hey, over a certain number of visits, then you get this much of a bonus. The better the business does, the more we can pay you. It's somewhat of a pretty transparent, fair setup. But the base salary, what we've learned over the last almost 10 years now of running these businesses and being involved in these businesses is that employees, like really good employees, they want a high base salary in comparison to their bonuses versus somebody like me. Give me the lowest salary you possibly can and just let me have like unlimited compensation. I'll take that all day because I'm fine in that environment. That's not a normal person. It's also why I'm chronically unemployable. No one can hire me because it just wouldn't work out well at this point. And I'm not the person you want to hire. You want to hire somebody that is looking for a job that is, you know, that is career driven and not just compensation driven based off of sort of a contractor mentality. So what I mean by that is, especially if you can find people that are a couple years out of school, this is actually something that I wish I would have known earlier, is we used to hire just like new grads because the one practice that I did work in that wasn't a military practice, that's basically how they built their practice. They would hire new grads, they would take them through residency, you know, build their clinical skill set, and they would just kind of flow right into the practice. So I assumed, all right, cool, this is the way you should do it. They're less expensive coming right out of school. They don't have as much experience. You can kind of mold them into what you want them to be. And to be fair, like it can work out well. It just depends on who you find. It has to be the right fit. What we found though, is if you can find clinicians that are, let's call it maybe like 3 to 10 years out of school, and they are expert clinicians, like they want to be really good at what they do. They want to get great outcomes. They have a lot of pride associated with their skill set, their outcomes, and their reputation. If you can take somebody like that and you can take them away from, in most cases, they're at a high volume clinic. Take them out of a high volume clinic. They're going to be way more satisfied with their work because they're going to have the right situation, the right context to work with people in a manner where they're going to get the best results. And they don't have to question whether, because they had 3 to 4 people stacked up in an hour, whether they actually have the right amount of time or they were able to, you know, engage with this person in the right way to get them to make a change they needed to change in order to get the outcome that they wanted. So you take this person that is trying to become a clinical expert or is a clinical expert out of that environment, put them into your environment. Normally, they're not going to make quite as much money, but it should be pretty close. And you give them stability through a paycheck. And the higher the base salary is, and the lower the bonuses are, the more likely it is that person is not going to want to leave and go somewhere else because they're looking for stability. They're looking for consistency. They don't want this big erratic difference in what they're making because in most cases they have responsibilities. They have a family, you know, maybe they have kids, they have a mortgage. These are the things that they are on the hook for every single month and they want stability in their career. These are people that as more of a mature business owner, I would look at hiring those folks because they're going to be more stable within the business. And they come batteries included. They know what they're doing already. They're really good clinicians. You may just have to adapt what they're doing to the cash model, which is definitely retraining to where they know how to engage with people with that. They know how to like set up their first visit to where they're actually getting people to commit to plans of care to see that through. And that just takes some retraining to do so. But they do require a higher base salary. So that sketches some people out that are newer business owners. And it did for me too, because you know, you don't actually know what you can expect that person to generate. We don't have the history of that. You don't have the data to back that up. So you're assuming what's going to happen. You don't actually know. But the ability to pay somebody a higher base salary and get a really quality clinician, it's dictated by what you charge. And the poor pay setup, which is this last mistake, it's primarily dictated by your average visit rate. So what are you charging on an hourly basis? And the areas that I see this be more problematic are actually in higher cost of living areas. So let's say like an LA, a San Francisco, New York City, Boston, you know, expensive cities. Expensive cities mean people have to make more money to be able to pay for their living, their livelihood each month. And if you are not pricing yourself accordingly, let's say you're charging $150 a visit and you're in LA, if that's your average, the problem that's going to happen is if we're looking at like average numbers, okay? If you have somebody that's full-time and they're seeing 115 visits a month and you're charging $150, that's about $17,000 a month that they're generating, or just over $200,000 a year that they're generating in total gross revenue. So that is the amount they're generating doesn't have anything deducted from an expense standpoint. So you have this person that is generating, let's call it $200,000. But if you're in that area, they're in one of these bigger cities, you know, that person is probably going to be making, let's call it $90,000, you know, in that profession, which it sounds like, okay, cool, there's still a lot of room there, right? But as you look at the profitability of your business, if you were to divide $200,000 by $90,000, it would give you about 2.2 would be the ratio there. So this is what's called a labor efficiency ratio. And this is how you can look at your business somewhat objectively in terms of what people need to make based off of what you're charging. So for service businesses on the low end, you really don't want to be below like a 2.7, closer to 3. So to put that into easier numbers, let's say somebody was generating $300,000, they should be paid $100,000, or slightly more, because that would put us at the ratio of around 3. So you take $300,000, which is what they generate, divided by their salary, which is 100, and that equals 3. Sorry, I'm doing public math on a podcast, because I know this is hard to visualize sometimes, but this is important to understand, because if we need you closer to a 3 in that ratio and you're paying somebody $90,000, that means they should be generating $270,000 in order for that to be the case, which if somebody is generating that much, they're actually going to be closer to an average visit rate of probably like $175 to $180 if they're seeing 115 visits, which is going to be between like 175 and 200. So if your average visit rate is 150, you have to compensate somebody based on the area. Otherwise, they're not going to take the job. That's the thing. Like they may take a small salary decrease, but they still got to pay their mortgage. They still got to buy groceries. And if it's that much more expensive to live in an area, the only variable that has to change is you have to charge more for what you're doing. So in these more, you know, kind of high cost of living areas, this is where we see big mistakes that are made by not being able to actually pay people what you need to pay them in your area. for them to match whatever their compensation would be in other places. And this is where we see people have a hard time hiring because their compensation structure is just too low. And they can't really raise it because if they do, they can cannibalize their own business and they put themselves in a place where they don't really have much profit. And that's not a very good place to be either, because you don't want to hire employees that then fulfill on what you're doing. And it sounds like, you know, okay, well, if you're paying somebody 90 and they're making 200, that's $110,000 in difference there. That sounds like a lot, but when you take into account all the overhead, the other staff, the taxes you have to pay on that, all the materials and everything that goes into having an employee and having a space, it gets whittled away really, really, really fast. And I'll put it in perspective. The consulting world, like big four consulting world, if you're looking like a Deloitte or a PwC, McKinsey, Ernst & Young, like these really big consulting companies that do all kinds of different, you know, variations of consulting with big businesses. They're typically going to be somewhere around like a 7 to an 8 if you're taking the same ratio, right? So, you know, if they're making $800,000 for the practice, then they're probably going to be making like 120 in salary, which is a lot of money for anybody to make, but in comparison to what they're generating, it's a small fraction. So if you're someone is making 200 and you're paying them 90, there's very little profit there, which means the business is not very stable. And if you have downturns, if you have slow periods, you have no cash reserves, you have no profit to be able to bolster those fluctuations that happen in just normal business. So you have to keep that in mind as you are setting your prices and maintaining your price structures. You really, really need to be able to pay people a competitive wage in order to get really good people in the business and for them to stick around for an extended period of time. Because one of the most expensive things that happens to a business is turnover. When somebody leaves, then like you firing somebody that's not the right fit or they're doing something that is just not right, that's different. That's something that has to be done and it sucks, but it needs to be done. When somebody is a good fit and they leave and you have clinician turnover, it's one of the slowest things. It's one of the things that slows your business down more than anything. And in particular early on, because if it's you, an admin, and one staff PT, and that staff PT leaves, so there's three of you, one leaves, that's 33% of your workforce just left. So if a company has 3,000 employees, it would be like 1,000 of them leaving. That would be a massive hit to that company, huge problem. And in your case, 1/3 of your workforce just left. And if it's not the right fit, cultural fit or whatever, that's actually still on you because you hired that person. So your hiring process, you missed something. You didn't vet the person well enough. You didn't ask the right questions. You know, you just misread something and that's still on you. But either way, it slows you down. It slows you down a ton because then you have to rebuild caseloads. You have to explain it to everybody of what's going on. And like people don't stay forever. But if you have continual turnover in your business, the people you work with, they're going to start to wonder what the heck is going on because good businesses tend to hold on to people longer. And businesses that are, you know, not maybe run as well, or the culture isn't as good, or employees aren't as happy, they tend to move on sooner. And it's something to keep in mind for you as you look at this, because a sort of amateur approach is hire a contractor, make them go do all the marketing for themselves. You know, it's all eat what you kill. That person's just going to leave and go do their own thing. That's what you're doing to yourself. Unless you give them a clear distinction of, once we get to this point, we're going to bring you on full time. It's going to be your salary. This is how we're going to structure everything. And explain that, then they're probably good to go. But in most cases, that's not what actually happens. So if you could think about it, like there's three big things that will help you quite a bit. If you look at what you shouldn't do, and you can kind of do the reverse, right? So hiring somebody just like you, very entrepreneurial person, only works if you have they have a strong idea of upward mobility within the business and what they can move towards. If that doesn't happen, then they're going to leave. So don't just hire entrepreneurial people. Number two, don't have unrealistic marketing expectations for the people that you hire. Don't expect them to just go out and find a bunch of patients and bring them into your office and sell them into packages and make you a bunch of money and you don't have to do anything. Like, that's not how it works. You have to be a part of that. You're the one that's in charge of driving people to the business more than anybody else. And you have to really own that role and spend a lot of time on that and structure what you do have them do from a marketing standpoint in a manner where it sets them up for success. And it's not just, hey, go figure this out. That's not fair for your employee to do that. And the last thing is, make sure your pay structure is set up in a way where you're retaining people. So, you know, pay them a salary that is competitive, that is within the financial constraints of your business. There is somewhat of like a financial risk bringing somebody on. And I think what most people freak out about is like, well, what if I can't pay their salary? Like, what if their schedule doesn't grow over the next 6 months? Well, you just let them go. I mean, that's pretty much the simplified answer is, if it's cannibalizing the business, and let's say you're completely wrong and you just absolutely cannot grow the business past yourself, then you just learned a mistake. You let that person go, but your business is still solvent. It's still in a good place. So it's not like a permanent thing. This is a temporary thing that you are, that you're testing out, and you can let somebody go if it's not working out. It's pretty much that simple, you know? So as you look at this, you're not tied to this person forever. So pick somebody that you think is going to be a good long-term fit for the business. I prefer to look for people that are more ponds than more ponds than rivers. So people that aren't going to run off and go do something else. People that want to be a part of a culture, people that want stability. That's more what I look for now. And those people, they're not going to go out and do quite as much, but they're going to be great fulfillers. They're going to be great employees. And there's a lot of stability that comes with folks like that. And it's going to be a little bit more of a burden on you, but hey, that's what you signed up for. You're a business owner and they're not. That's why you have risk. You have some of these other things that you take off their plate. And the reality is they're never going to know how difficult it is to be on your side. They'll have no idea. And they don't want to know because they don't want to own a business, and they'll stick around yours for a long period of time and can be great fits in the business and a great mutual relationship between somebody that just wants to be a great clinician in an environment that allows that with a culture that is fun. And, you know, for you to have somebody that's a dependable team member that allows you to then go do the things that you're uniquely good at. So that's my hiring advice. Like I said, this is something that's been going on a lot. We've been doing a lot of this within our mastermind group. It's actually been really cool to see. We have about 200 businesses that we're working with now actively within that community. And I have to look at the numbers again, but I want to say in the last 6 months, we've had, I don't know, over between 30 and 50 hires of staff clinicians that have occurred. And so a lot of them are going through it and they're growing their businesses. And the first one I think is the hardest one. And my mentor, Kelly, would always say, like, the first pancake is always shit. And so when you hire your first person, like, it's, you know, might not work. It may not be your best moment when you look back in your hiring history. You might do great, right? So hopefully this helps you. And hopefully us being able to share what's going on with that community is helping. If you have a business that you you know, have as a cash or hybrid practice and you're actively looking to, you know, improve your business skills, to grow that business, to be able to really grow to a point where you have a legitimate true business that runs without you, makes money without you being there, and is a potential sellable or passive entity that you can turn that into one day if you decide that's what you want to do, I highly recommend going to physicaltherapybiz.com. Check out what we have going on. You can learn a little bit more about our process and our team. I think we have the best team in the industry. You know, at this point, we have about 18 people that solely focus on helping these businesses, grow these businesses, support these businesses. And it's been pretty awesome to be a part of and see as these companies have really grown to, you know, over $50 million in annual revenue combined between the companies that we're working with. So it's pretty awesome. If you're interested in any of that, go to physicaltherapybiz.com, check it out. Maybe it's a fit. We could help you out. If so, that'd be awesome. Otherwise, guys, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I'll catch you next week. What's up, PT entrepreneurs? We have a new exciting challenge for you guys. It's our 5-day PT Biz part-time to full-time challenge where we help you get crystal clear on how to actually go from a side hustle to a full-time clinic. Even if you haven't started yet, this is a great way to get yourself organized in preparation for eventually going full-time into your business. So we actually help you get crystal clear on how much money you're actually going to need to replace with your business to be able to make a lateral transfer, how many people you're actually going to need to see based on what you should be charging. We're going to tell you 3 different strategies you can take to go from part-time to full-time, and you get to pick the one that seems like the best fit for you for your current situation. We even show you all the sales and marketing systems that we teach within our mastermind for people that are scaling to multiple clinicians, you know, past themselves, that you need to have in your business to be able to go full-time. And the last thing is we help you create a 1-page business plan. This is a plan that's going to help you get very clear on exactly what you need to do and drive action. That's what this is all about. We want you to win. We want you to take action. And in order to do so, you have to get really clear on what you need to do next. So go to physicaltherapybiz.com/challenge. Get signed up for the challenge today. It's totally free. We think this is going to be a game changer for you and are excited to go through it. Hey, real quick before you go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and I would love it if you got involved in the conversation. So this is a one-way channel. I'd love to hear back from you. I'd love to get you into the group that we have formed on Facebook. Our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group has about 4,000 clinicians in there that are literally changing the face of our profession. I'd love for you to join the conversation, get connected with other clinicians all over the country. I do live trainings in there with Eve Gigi every single week, and we share resources that we don't share anywhere else outside of that group. So if you're serious about being a PT entrepreneur, a clinical rainmaker, head to that group, get signed up, go to facebook.com/groups/PT Entrepreneur, or go to Facebook and just search for PT Entrepreneur, and we're going to be the only group that pops up under that name.